Session number 18259, Reel 10.
Andy Gallantry, Reel 10.
And I lived in this house with these Italian women. Well, the family, there were only really women about. Very few men. There were one or two elderly men. And I stayed in this house until I was fully recovered. They nursed me back to health very well. Shortly after that, we went into, I don't know whether I had mentioned it previously, about this chappy who was what was called a carbonaio, a chap who used to make, charcoal. Yes. And he was older people living there. In fact, he came back to the village whilst we were there. He'd been out working, and he came back, and we were introduced to him through the other people in the village. And he told us his work, and they offered, and he did, in fact, make a hut for us to live in the hills, most all the well, not far from the mountains and mountain ranges, and it was just thick woodland. And he said, "Well, what we'll do, we'll make one of these things." So we all went together, each armed with a matchet, and off into the woods, into the hills. And he found a suitable spot for us to build this hut. And he used to go out and they used to build them themselves to stay in whilst they were out working. They were out for weeks and weeks on end, apparently. And we went there, we built this with his supervision. We built this hut, and it was all out of the trees and the countryside. There wasn't a thing that we took with us. It was all done with the trees and the foliage. And we made two. We got the trees with a fork, two large ones, one for either end of this hut, and then another large one to go along the top that slotted into this fork. And they were put into the ground so far with these the two main end ones. And then with smaller trees, they built it was like a roof, you see, just like the roof of a house. We built that, and interwoven with the smaller brushwood and small trees. And then we cut sods all from roundabouts into small, easily manageable pieces. And put them on. Turn them over onto this top of this structure, onto the roof, and we made a roof out of the sods. It was as dry and as warm as anything. It was really, really comfortable, you know, because as I say, we'd been sleeping out under the hedge, under the tree, you see, or that's it. Apart from when we'd been into the houses with these people, and. And so there we stayed for a while. I just can't remember how long we were there. But it was in one of this hut when we were recaptured again. One morning, there were four of us. But one of the lads, they were from London, the other three lads. They were one of the London regiments. Was it London Rifle Brigade? I forget. It's the correct title, but they were from London, and there was one of them called George, and he wasn't with us. He'd gone to a nearby. There was little farmsteads dotted here and there round about, which we used to visit during the daytime. You see, anyhow, he'd gone this particular afternoon, and he hadn't come back. by nightfall, because we got ourselves off to sleep, and we're awoken very abruptly one morning. I was up, the time was, it was very early, 2-3 o'clock time, I would imagine. And anyhow, it was there was a party of maybe about half a dozen, a couple of Germans, and a couple of fascists, Italian fascist troops, you know. And there were another two others, which I always believed that there were, I don't know if history serves me right, but King Emmanuel of Italy, I think he was in exile at that time when Mussolini took power. But there were still some troops who were loyal to the royals. And I think they were a sort of if I remember rightly, they had a different type of uniform, which sort of could pick them out from the fascists, because the fascists were really, they seemed very evil people. And they were armed to the teeth with, automatic weapons and these stick grenades and things, you know. And of course, they dragged us out of this hut, you know, unceremoniously, I might add. And well, that was very frightening, actually, because I thought, no, man, what's going to happen to us now? We were in partly civilian clothes. These people in the village had brought us some civilian clothes, you see. They just said, if you might need them sometime if you move on to try and, you know, do further your escape. But fortunately, we kept our greatcoat, our British Army greatcoat, without, because we had circles, coloured circles and patches on the backs, you see, so to show that you were a prisoner of war, you see. And we'd kept these, fortunately, because I was always thought, I believed that if you were caught by the enemy and you were in civilian clothes, and they could shoot you without any option at all. That was what I believed. But then, and I was thinking at the time, well, what's going to happen to us? They burnt the place down then, and set fire to this hut. Got out what we wanted, with little bits of food that were being given. And then we marched along through the wood, down a track. And then we came to a road. It was probably later in the morning, that, because by the time we got down to this road, after we'd had it was breaking light. And we got down to this road, and we were bundled into a truck, an army, you know, army truck, and driven off. And we finished up at Florence. Now, in Florence, we were taken to a Carabinieri barracks in Florence, the police barracks. And it would seem that the Germans had taken over, well, they had taken command of this place, but they were using it as one of the high command posts, but what I could see of it. And there was all kinds of top German brass floating about, you know, and big palatial place inside, you know. And we're taken in there into a room and interrogated by these three or four high-ranking Germans with an interpreter, and interviewing us as to what we're doing, what we're doing in the hills, where we'd been, what we'd been up to, and as I say, we didn't. There's nothing we could give away, really. We said, well, we're prisoners of war. We're captured in Libya. And that was it. That was the reason we were there. We said that it's every prisoner's duty to escape. You know, they expect you to, when you, I know they're not British, you know, not if you're captured, you escape, providing the odds aren't stacked against you. That was my view. And you know, we were taken there, and we were kept there 3 or 4 days, I would imagine. I just don't know, really. A few days, anyhow. And we're in cells, because they say it was a big, it was a police barracks. And there were some cells there. We were bunged into these cells. And we had a sort of a wooden bed to lie on, and one of these, like they have in the British cells, of leather pillows. And there was one morning they came along, and they gave us a bit of food. And then they took us out one morning into a big exercise yard. And it went through my mind again, and I'm sure it did, my pals, the two pals, what's going to happen to us now, you see. Although we had more, I think we had convinced them who we were, that we weren't, you know, spies or anything like that. We were British soldiers, British prisoners of war. And they took us into this exercise yard, and it was just a question, just having a lesson from exercise, and that happened 2 or 3 times once we were there. And as I say, they seemed to accept that we, who we said we were, you see. Nothing too sinister about it. And then we moved from there. And although I can't remember how we got to, went from there, these are things that sort of escape my memory now. I would think we'd gone by a truck, I would imagine. But we went back, and I got back to the camp that we'd left earlier. First camp I went into, which was PG82. It's, I don't know whether I'd mentioned earlier about it, the name of it. I don't think I mentioned the name. It was called Laterina, was the camp. Laterina, Campo Concentramento, PG82. And that's where I went for a second time. How long I was in there again, I just can't say. I don't think it was so very long.
But this time under German supervision?
Not, it's still the Italians, still occupied this Laterina camp, yes. There was Germans with the party who were who captured us, see. And, but we'd taken back this camp, but it was still under Italian supervision of the camp. And then, of course, by that time, maybe, of course, the Italians said, yes, it would probably, and let me by that time, Italy had capitulated, so I would imagine then that it would probably be in that, supervised by the Germans at the time, yes. And we were then moved. And I remember us being marched down to big railway sidings, and we were put into trucks, the cattle trucks, you know, big box vans is the word for them, I think, on the railway, box vans. And there were so many of each into these trucks. It was just straw on the ground, on the floor. A steel drum in the corner for doing any, you know, for your toilet. And we were put into these things. There's no, the only ventilation was just a small slit on the, at each corner of the, on the wall, on the wooden wall at each corner. And you couldn't get up to see out, you know, less than one else could. Sort of tip of the leg up. And then the doors slammed, and that was us inside these trucks. And we went, how long we went, I don't know. We seemed to be ages and ages and days going along, rattling along, and then we'd get, come into a siding, and we'd maybe stay there. Seemed to be hours waiting. Go along a bit further, maybe, and then it'd stop somewhere, and then the doors had opened, and then we were allowed out to have a bit of exercise. And then on the journey, probably it gives a little bit of food. He used to give us hard biscuits, lot bigger than our normal English ration. And some they used to give some Italian meat in small tins, and it was horrible stuff. Greasy, fat meat. Oh, it was shocking. And as I say, we went. How long we were, I don't know. But how long the journey took. Just, and yeah, we finished up then. At this camp in Germany. Which we went through, of course, we go from Italy, we go through the Brenner Pass into Austria. In that camp, I just can't remember the number. I did know it one time, not very long ago. Moosberg was the name. I've looked on the World Atlas to try and find it, but I cannot find Moosberg. I found a Meesberg, but no Moosberg. anyhow, this camp was a huge camp, and it was more of a transit camp. There was a regular staff there, and the regular British staff, under Sergeant Major or whatever. But there was a regular British staff there, and it was a terrific place. There was all kinds of nationalities in there. Displaced persons, prisoners of war, and I'll say we're in this spot, Moosberg, and again, I just can't think how long we're in there. But whilst we're in there, we could roam about the place, and it was the activities that used to go on in there. All provided by the Red Cross, British Red Cross, for the comforts of the residents whilst we're in there. And they used to play, like we do, we did in Latrina camp a little, but they used to play football in there. Different countries, because there's sufficient people to make two or three football teams up from different countries, French, and others. And they also have these international football matches. And there were places set aside for a theatre. A lot of people might think, well, this seems strange going on for a prison camp. But it was true. And there was people in there who had had bands, jazz bands and brass bands. And all donated and stuff sent back through the British Red Cross. And I've seen photographs. I never saw a show live whilst I was in there, but I've seen some photographs of some shows that they put on, because they used to collect all kinds of materials that used to come into the camp for making things, And I've seen photographs of some shows that's been put on, and really you'd think you were looking at a professional stage, with the drapes and whatever. Because there was that many people in there, and people from all different walks of life, you see, who could put things on like that. I met one I'll speak about later on, South African fella, he was the same. As I said, it was and there was people coming and going most of the time while I was in there. How long was there? I don't know. The next thing is we moved from there, and we're in. I can remember we're taken to some sidings, and we're put into these trucks again. Off we went then to one of the working camps. The names, I just can't remember the names at all.
Which part of Germany was it?
This is West Germany, Austria, West Germany. And it was, if I remember, there was a place, I was thinking of it later on, Lambsdorff. I don't know whether you probably had it in your travel, but I had it, there was a place called Lambsdorff. And that was one of the names that stuck in my mind. It was either that, this is the camp we went to, or one later on. But we was taken to this one on a working party, and they were building a large hydroelectric power station, I can speak. And it covered a vast area, and there was about three or four of these cooling towers in there, you know. And there was still, but this building was still being built. And the camp itself, it was huge, and it had quite a number of different compounds for the different nationalities, you see. So all nationalities worked in there. And we went to work on this this electric power station. And there were a party of us, it would only be about 20, I think. And we were handed over to a civilian contractor. Zubrich was the name of the factory. Now that name sticks in my mind. Zubrich, they call this, yeah. And he was, he used to do all the concreting work. And he had as a foreman a Polish chappy. And we were living in these huts in our compound. And he used to come, we used to get up in the morning, forget what time, you'd get ourselves washed and dressed and off to down to the gate. And then we used to be collected by this foreman man, this little Polish chap here, he was a little chap. And we were taken then, marched off with others from other other compounds down to this site. You see. All had different jobs on this site. And our little party, we were concreting. Well, we were mixing the concrete. And we had a little hut. We used to, just like you see on building sites in England, a little workman's hut, where we used to get in there if the weather rained. And we used to go in there just to have a little bit of... We used to go out in the morning early, but they used to knock off for about 9 o'clock. The workers also did that work for breakfast, you see. And we used to save a little bit of our food that we could, a bit of bread and for our breakfast time, you see. Then we used to have a little break for about half an hour and sit in his hut and I say, then after about half an hour we'd start working. But we were concrete and we were working on these concrete mixers. And well, we used to have some being British, you know, we used to, we used to be up to all the tricks we could, of non-cooperation, we'd say, you know. And we've seen these mixers, these concrete mixers, you throw so many buckets of sand in, so many buckets of gravel, and then so much cement. Well, we used to make some of the most awful concoctions, you know. I don't know if the thing's still standing or not, these buildings. And there was two or three of us on that, mixing, putting the ingredients into this concrete mixer. And then when it was, we thought it was suitable, we used to tip it out onto, you've probably seen, there are like a skip on wheels. It's a frame on wheels on a narrow gauge track that they used to use on a lot of building sites. I remember him going back a long time when I was a young boy, but I haven't seen him for on our British, you know, English building site for years and years. But they used these there, and we had just a narrow gauge track to take these skips. They're just like a skip, but they were on a swivel at either end of this frame. There'd be 4 to 5 feet long, and the skip, and you could tip it one way or the other. You see, you could either tip it to the right or tip it to the left, tip whatever, you know, tip your stuff out. And we used to put a mix into there on this track, and then we used to have to take it through into this into where it was needed in this factory, where the, you know, this place, the building, the footings and things like that, you know. And they had people in there, they had joiners in there doing the shuttering, as they call it, you know, the woodwork, you know. And in the same way, you still have to take the concrete down and then tip it over. Well, a time and time again, we used to go like hell. You just get onto this line and shove and jump on, you know. Well, of course, it wasn't very before long. They used to join in the track and pop, it used to go over. And you used to get into some trouble for that. There was a Straff gang, they call it. Harbeiten's word, work, the word for work in German, but why this Straff? I think it was like a punishment gang, was this thing. And they were working on digging, because there was none of these big diggers like we have now, these JCB things. Most of the work was done by labourers with these long continental shovels that go with a long handle, nothing like those awkward things. And they used to have to dig the foundations out with these things. And there was mud up to the rise, and anybody who would really misbehave badly used to get put on there for a week. We were threatened with that time and time again, but as I said, fortunately, we never, I don't think any of our party ever got put onto it. And then we used to get in the raw materials for this concrete, and used to get there was a railway ran into this site, and used to bring all the cement, you know, trucks used to get right into this site. Used to bring in the bags of cement and gravel and sand, see, on the truck. And it was our job to, it was near where we were working, you see, concrete. And it was our job then to unload them, you see. We had a big hut to put the cement in. And of course we used to go as slow as we possibly dare, you know. Because the thing about it, there was no German prisoners, German soldiers directly over us, you see. It was such a big site. They just used to patrol, you see. And then if any of these here men, the bosses, had any complaints, they used to tell them. And of course, we used to they'd stay with us for a while, else we worked, carried on with our work. But we never really got put onto this.